This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
We are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com. Sam Webb, Ira Weintraub on the other side, and joining us as they do every single Thursday, the crew, the guys from MGO Blog, the MGO Blog Roundtable, breaking down all things Michigan. Heavy focus right now on the hardwood as the Wolverines, they dropped one as they ran into an offensive buzzsaw against Illinois. And then they exacted some revenge and took out some frustration on the Michigan State Spartans. We'll get into that and look ahead to Iowa and Ohio State with the crew from MGO Blog, starting with Brian Cook. Brian, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. If anyone gestures at me to indicate that I'm too short to check them, I will complain to the officials.
You had to love it, right? You had to love it. Seth Fisher. Seth, how are you?
Yeah, if we screw this up, I'm throwing all you guys under the bus. Just want you to know that.
And then, you talk about leadership and how bad we are as leaders. It's all on us, right, Coach? How about Craig Ross? You come up with a better plan against Hunter Dickinson than double teaming him in the final 3 minutes of the game. How about we do that a little earlier in the game, Coach? Would that have been a good suggestion for Tom?
It would have been good. And remember, Tom actually had his team doing that. He was just so involved with Hunter, he didn't notice that his team wasn't double-teaming him, apparently, or something like that. But I'm all right, I guess.
I want to talk a little about Illinois. I don't want to belabor that game. They were an offensive juggernaut. I mean, Plummer comes out bombing from three. I mean, he looks unconscious out there. Then in the second half, they get everything going. So the Curbelo's getting to the cup, and Trent Frazier's getting to the cup, even though he hit a big three there late. If you want to talk about the difference in that game, though, because you got really, really good production from Devontae Jones and Caleb Houston. The difference in the game was the Kofi Hunter matchup, Brian. And I wonder if how Hunter got outplayed in that game really was part of the fuel for what he did against Michigan State.
Yeah, I mean, Coburn is just extremely large, and Hunter wasn't attacking him, right? He was just using his mid-range game, and the shots didn't fall. And so I think there was probably a little bit of a discussion afterwards, and it's like, you need to go at these guys. You're Hunter Dickinson, even if it's Kofi Coburn, and then for poor Julius Marble to get the version of Hunter Dickinson that's attacking the basket, drawing fouls, and then putting up reverse slams was obviously key for Michigan.
Yeah, man, it was a repeat of the game plan that we saw Michigan State unveil up in East Lansing, Seth, to great effect in the second half. Not as much in the first half, as both Hunter and Musa were doing some good work up there in East Lansing in the first half. And then, you know, they came out of that feeling like, okay, we can just run a bunch of bodies at Hunter. You know, Marcus Bingham was decent against him up there. Marble was another body to throw at him. Sissoko, it's kind of hindered him a bit as well. And they thought that was going to work again. It was pretty evident early in the game, though, Seth, that it wasn't going to work, and old is never adjusted.
Well, you know what kind of worked is that Bingham, like, he's good. He protects the rim really well. And they played him only 9 minutes in this game. So, like, Michigan went up to East Lansing and like was blitzing screens for no one could understand why. You saw them use drop coverage in this game, and it worked. And it's been working against Michigan State all year because their guards don't want to pull up and take shots for some reason, even though they can make them. But then this was like Michigan State's turn to like just completely lose the game plan because like Bingham is your best asset right there. He was really working against Dickinson. And in this game, he got beat once, but he also got a block in this one. And then he's gone, and like, okay, we'll take Marble. they kept on putting up against like a 6'8" power forward. Like, thank you, Izzo. I maybe he was just focused on the refs or something, and he wasn't paying attention to his team. But like, it made less sense than, or just as much sense as Michigan blitzing screens at the in the first game.
Yeah, it. I don't know, Craig. If he felt like Marcus Bingham was getting punked a little bit. I'm just guessing because, Hunter did go out and block Marcus Bingham's shot as well. And you can sort of see it be like, oh, this is a different Hunter today. And I don't know if that affected his. I don't know what the rationale was. I just know whoever they ran at him, it was like, who's next? Hunter might have said that. Who else you got? Because I'm killing these guys.
I mean, in the game at Breslin, there was that key point at the beginning of the second half where it was Bingham versus Hunter, and Bingham was doing a great job one-on-one. Like, he blocked a couple of shots. He forced Hunter into some tough takes, and that's when they really pulled away. And in this game, he had a block on Hunter, right? Like, he got put under the basket and gave up a layup, but he was able to compete in a way that Julius Marble wasn't. And Julius Marble wasn't doing anything on the other end. He had two buckets in the first 3 minutes of the game, one of them an uncontested dunk, and then he didn't score again, period. So I don't get it. When you have almost as many Joey Hauser minutes on Hunter Dickinson as Marcus Bingham. But that's what he's been doing. Like, Bingham's only played like 13 minutes in the last three or four games. So, and it's not like they're playing well, right? Like, they're in a free fall. And they managed to sneak by Purdue because they shoot the lights out. But yeah, his handling of Bingham has been really poor for his program for the past 2 years. And he's really wasting a talent. And I know that, Bingham's not going to be the be all and end all, but yeah, he can D up in a way that Thomas Kithier can't, right? Like, that guy was getting minutes over Bingham last year. Michigan should get Bingham. Next year, you're going to lose Hunter. Get him. Go get him.
I was confused when he committed to them in the first place. That's water under the bridge. Craig, what did you see? Both games. The Illinois game and then the Michigan State game.
Okay. Well, the Illinois game, you have to really say Illinois played just a quality basketball. I mean, in the first half, Plummer, that wasn't a fluke by Plummer. Plummer's coming off a game where he hit 8 of 10 from 3. And against Michigan in that first half, I mean, he's shooting them from on the sidelines. He's shooting them, and most of those shots are contested, and he's just making them. And then in the second half, Michigan got caught up on the screen game, where I think Phil his name is Martelli. For some reason, Will Tiemann kept calling him Phil Martini, and I don't think that's his actual name, but I guess Tiemann didn't quite know that. But Phil said they had 8 or 9 blowbys. It was a little more complicated than that, I think, because Hunter was so concerned about Kofi, who was playing really well in the second half and making tough shots, really. And that when they ran the 1-5 screen, he wasn't showing at all, and made it impossible for the guard to do anything with the guy going to the basket. The first Michigan State game, the blitzing, I understand why Michigan blitzed and hard-hedged in that game.
Do you? Work.
Yeah.
Why? Explain.
Because I'll tell you what the thinking had to have been, although I haven't talked to them. The thinking had to have been that this is a team that turns the ball over, that doesn't really value the ball all that much. And turnovers are important. And so I think that it was probably Soddy's idea, and would be my guess, and I would say it wasn't a bad idea, is that we're just going to go after him. we're going to go after the ball handler and blitz the ball screens. Well, you're right. It didn't work. We got killed with it. We got split numerous times. They probably should have gotten out of it quicker. It wasn't, in my mind, nearly as mysterious as Izzo's decision in this game, in the Michigan State game, to put Hunter one-on-one in a game where Hunter has no foul troubles and is playing aggressively and is clearly motivated and is clearly killing whoever you put out there. And so it seemed that they should have been doubling. Izzo obviously knew that because he said, yeah, he told his team to double, but they just didn't do it, which borders on the, I don't know what you can call it. I mean, after watching the Illinois game and the two Michigan hockey games this weekend, I felt like drinking old woodchuck
Who buys that Tom Izzo would allow that? Like, you does Tom Izzo strike you as the guy who would either stroke out or would put in walk-ons if the guys on the floor weren't doing what they were told?
Would you listen to Tom Izzo? I mean.
Well, I don't know, but I mean, it was crazy. And so he needed to be, he needed to double Hunter, especially when it isn't like Michigan is the best three-point shooting team in the NCAA. I mean, we're nothing if not erratic from shooting the three. And in fact, that's, as we, I think Brian and Seth mentioned last week, you know, that's sort of been a key to the season. And when they shoot well from three, they win. When they don't, they don't. So I'm not sure what the hell the guy is thinking, if anything at all on that. From Michigan's point of view, they didn't blitz or hard hedge. I demur on the idea that they were in drop coverage in this game, because they really weren't. They were in a soft, it's a continuum, and they were soft hedging. They were showing the center around the backside of the screen. And if you watch, and in particular Frankie in the first half was a freaking genius on playing that screen. Not only did he anticipate where the ball handler was going, he anticipated exactly where the screener was going. And those screeners were illegal. They were, as soon as the screen hit, they were backing down into the lane to try and back the guard away from the ball handler. Didn't work because Frankie in particular saw what was going on and managed to cut off the ball handler anyway. And I demur again on the idea that there were open looks for State. I watched this tape three times now. Those were hard looks coming off the ball screen. Very difficult looks where the ball handler would have had to have shot moving forward as opposed to squaring up and going up. So I felt like, and it wasn't Frankie, Eli played these screens very well too. And so truly, it was the better choice, not what I call drop coverage, what I call soft hedging. And I think what John Beilein would call soft hedge.
Yeah, you know, I definitely took note of Frankie and his ball screen coverage contrast, in comparison to, it's like, man, Devontae Jones is going to have a tough night. And it just so happened that he picked up a couple of fouls, and we got a chance to see Frankie a little more. And I thought it was one of the key parts of the game that Frankie was able to come in and be a steadying force. He didn't score a point. How about you saying that for a guy who didn't score any points in the game? But I made a remark during the contest, like, Frankie's playing with his head up. It's not 100 miles an hour with his head down. He is attacking the rim with his head up. He's finding guys. So I thought all four of his assists were really, really good.
They're the kind of assists where it's not like you're kicking it out for a three-pointer, which is a good shot. They were wide open layups and dunks, right? Like, mm-hmm. The worst one was probably a 3-foot Hunter Dickinson jump hook. So the quality of the shots he was setting up was really excellent too. So just got to get in the off season and be able to shoot even a little bit. Just shoot it a little bit. Just a little bit.
Right? Well, you know who's shooting it a little bit now? And it's three games in a row. Look, they lost the Illinois game, but Michigan has played three pretty good offensive games in a row, right? And one of the big keys to that is Caleb Houston. And it's the kinds of the types of threes that he's taking. He's getting the best looks, not settling, not jacking with hands in his face and that kind of thing. Really, really more committed to attacking the rim. It shows up with his points at the rim. It also shows up in his trips to the free throw line. The one blemish on an otherwise, you know, perfect day, as far as I was concerned, was he missed the free throw to disrupt his streak of 22 in a row. That dude has been a different ball player, Seth.
Oh yeah, I want to jump back to Frankie really quick, because I think the rest of the team had to adjust to him a little bit too. You remember earlier in the season, he was diving into the lane, picking up everybody, and then dumping it off. And whoever was receiving that was like, "Wait, what ball? What are you doing?" And like, even like the first one, Hunter was a little bit like, "Oh, ball." And then the second time, he was ready for it. So like, you know, as the team adjusts to the style that Frankie plays, and this goes into next year too, he becomes a much more effective player. And then Houston, I mean, he's home. Like, if you look at the splits between Houston at home versus on the road, he's taking the same shots. And he just, for some reason, there's just something about it. When he gets on the road, he doesn't make them. His defense, on the other hand, has really come along, and that's been traveling too. We had him we call it a scion, but like, we call him like a defensive problem, right? Like, he was one of the issues they had, is that he couldn't guard threes. He has become much better. He's not the most athletic guy, but he knows where to be now. He's not making five mistakes per game, and he doesn't get pulled because he's made a defensive mistake, which was happening a lot earlier in the year.
Yeah, we need Kobe to get to where Caleb is as a defender, right? Because it's been a tough road to hoe for Kobe, and so that's the next level for him in season. Like, he needs an off season of building his body and growth in his game. But for here and now to stay on the floor, and I'm sure they said this to him on the sideline, because they needed minutes from him with the foul trouble they were in. And you could just see Phil, and I think Sadi even got on him when he got to the bench as well. It's like, man, dude, you're giving up too much out there on the floor. Caleb isn't anymore, to your point, Seth. He has definitely improved on that end. But I think that it all goes in. We actually talked about that. You know, after the Rutgers game, I mean, he was dialed in on the defensive end of the floor. He's attacking the rim as well. Those things sort of lending themselves to his rhythm and confidence as a shooter. It just feels like it's all coming together for him at this point.
Well, one thing UM Hoops pointed out was that he has giant home and road splits. Mm-hmm. Giant. And so the last three games where he's been playing pretty well have all been at home. And I don't know, it's so big that you got to feel like there's something to it. So this Iowa game coming up, hopefully he can maintain that. And then maybe he's got four games in a row where he's really feeling it. And then he can take that to Ohio State and actually perform. Because, you know, Michigan has not been getting any production out of anybody except Devontae Jones, Eli Brooks, and Hunter Dickinson before these last three games. Like, you know, the rest of the team would have something like 15 points, and you just can't win games unless you have more than that from the guys who are backing up. So you saw Terrence Williams come off the bench, hit some threes. You had a couple of good games from Bufkin in there. So you have some guys who are kind of coming along here, and you just need to have someone step up. You need a fourth guy to step up in every game. It doesn't always have to be Caleb. It's probably usually going to be Caleb, but three guys can't carry the whole load.
Yeah, it's the home road split, and Seth, you mentioned that too. There's no question. I think there's absolutely something to it. I think there's also something to his first shot falling. I mean, I think that Phil mentioned that. It's like, you know, he sees it go in. It sort of does a thing. I imagine it does for most players, but maybe more so for him as a freshman, and a freshman who had been struggling. Seeing that first shot go in is like a switch flipping, almost seems, over these last few games. So hopefully there's more where that came from tonight, because in Iowa City, you know, I remember that being one of the games where you're watching him shoot and it's like, man, he's just not confident. And you could really feel it in that contest. Fortunately, other guys, you know, were going really well, Musa especially. And so, you know, this is one of the adjustments that they're going to have to make in tonight's game, dealing with a Caleb Houston that you actually have to respect on the perimeter. So I'm curious what you guys make of tonight's matchup. They did a decent job against Keegan Murray last time. Yeah, he had 23 points, took 23 shots to get there, though, Craig. They kept his efficiency down. That was one of the keys to victory.
Yeah, Iowa is a pretty good matchup for Michigan, even though Iowa's probably playing better than just about everyone in the Big Ten right now. If you look at what they've done, I think they've won 7 of their last 8, and the only loss was in Iowa against Michigan. And outside of that, they've been killing teams. I mean, I'm looking here. They're plus 12, plus 23, plus 23, plus 13, plus 23, plus 10, plus 12 in their wins. So these aren't even close wins. And in this period of time, Keegan Murray has moved up in the KenPom ratings to the number two offensive player in the country. And he's been killing teams. Now, he did not kill us. Uh-huh. It took him a lot of shots to get his 23 points or whatever it is. But the problem Iowa has is they don't have a center. They've got this guy, Philip Rebraca, who really just is not a matchup for Hunter. And in the Michigan game, Michigan-Iowa game, between Hunter and Musa, I think they were like, they had a lot of points on a lot of looks between the two. I think Hunter Musa might have been something like 12 of 14 from the field.
Yeah, 12 of 15, yep.
Yeah, and so they, you know, part of that is that their attention was on Hunter, and it was a field day for Musa because they just don't have that sort of physicality in the paint. And if you look at Iowa, who else have they had trouble with this year? Purdue and Illinois. So they're going to have trouble with any sort of a center presence, but they're not going to have trouble apparently with anybody else. And so I like Michigan's chances tonight. I liked them in Iowa City because of that. But they're a really good team, and to me the key isn't so much Keegan who's going to get his points. It's, you know, what shots do you limit him to, and does Bohannon go off? Because you can't pretend he's not on the court, and you gotta, because he can. He has range, and when he gets hot, he's hard to deal with. So those are the two things. The interesting thing about Iowa is they don't turn it over at all. They're number one in the country in fewest turnovers, or in turnover rate, and so that's a very efficient offensive team with. And maybe one of the better 3 or 4 offensive teams in the country, but they're defensively, it's a typical McCaffrey team. They, you know, they don't pay much attention to that really. So,
well, Musa did a great job on defense too. And that was, I think, the key to that game is that Diabate was able to match up against Murray, and he doesn't normally get somebody that athletic on him. That changed the game. And then Diabate also fed off his defensive performance, I thought, to get to his offense. And that's kind of what Michigan needs. And I think that, you know, I was going to go right at him and try to get a couple fouls on him and, you know, get Johns on the court because they had a lot more success as soon as he came out. So I think that's going to be the key tonight is whether Diabate can avoid foul trouble. He's gotten into a couple games where he's got a couple quick ones, or I think he picked up another frustration one last game. Like, you know, as long as he's in there, I think Michigan's got the two things that you need to beat Iowa.
Yeah, to your point, Craig, they did and you comment on this too, Brian. They did a good job not only keeping Bohannon in check, but they kept Iowa in check from the 3-point line. I don't have their stats over that run that you talked about, Craig, but I can't imagine there was a game they shot as poorly from 3-point range as they did against Michigan. Michigan held them to 22% from 3 in that game. Brian, so hopefully there's more where that came from too.
Well, yeah, and those were not generally good looks. Like Bohannon was pulling up from the logo, that kind of thing. He took some really bad frustration shots. So Michigan was actually worse from 3 in that game than Iowa. They were 4 of 20, so they were able to win because they shot 64% from 2. And you're gonna either need to replicate that or actually hit some shots at home. I mean, we've talked about this on this show before, is that Michigan's divergence in their shooting in wins and losses is crazy. So for you know, if Michigan's able to hit some threes against this team, I don't see how Iowa's going to keep up, because they're not going to be able to check Dickinson and Diabate on the inside as long as Keegan Murray doesn't absolutely go off. And from the first game, you know, the first setup there, they had Murray like bully Diabate in the post and get a bucket. And I was like, all right, here we go. And then they went away from that. They seem to totally forget that first possession seemed really productive, and that Keegan Murray is really good at backing down guys on the block. So I think there's going to be an adjustment there, and you're going to see a more effective Murray. But as Seth said, you know, Diabate brings a presence that not a whole lot of other teams have nationally.
Yeah, he was also cramping up a little bit late in the game. I'm sure he would mention that as being one of the factors for him. But yeah, Luka was the biggest factor by far. As I look at this contest and seeing how it fits into the pattern that you talk about in live, Michigan has been up, down, up, down, up, down, right? They win one, they lose one. They win one, they lose one. I think this last three-game stretch is still it's an anomaly in that the loss sandwich between the wins wasn't a bad offensive performance.
No, I mean, and it wasn't even a bad defensive performance. They just got torched by a guy who was unconscious, right? Like, he's taking pull-up jumpers, moving to his right, no problem. He's like, you know, he went off. And he's capable of doing that. He's like a 99th percentile spot-up guy plumber. So I wasn't even really upset about the defensive performance in that game. It's just sometimes you get got, and that's what happened. So
right. Yeah. So if we look at that then as not a bad performance by Michigan, I mean, this is actually already a different sort of sequence than we've seen here in recent memory from Michigan, in that they've put together three strong outings in a row, and that's, we haven't seen that in a while. So that bodes well for tonight, right?
Yeah, they're kind of like a seventh seed that has gotten really unlucky this year. Sorry, Brian, you can go.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Sam and you, Brian, on this for sure. I mean, Illinois just played great offensive basketball, and the ball went in the basket. It wasn't that Michigan was terrible on defense. Second half had some problems, but part of it is a matchup issue, because Michigan's primary strength is Hunter. And when you put Kofi on him, all of a sudden that, you know, that matchup advantage isn't really there. And you add that with Illinois just killing it from every place on the perimeter, you just have to say that, you know, they played a hell of a game. And I think Michigan in that game was 1.15 points per possession, which is really, really good. The problem was that Illinois was like 1.25 points per possession, which is off the charts. And also recall, this was an 82-80 game with 2 minutes left. I mean, this was a game where, you know, Michigan was still in it. And then at 84-80, Caleb was fouled at the rim. And this was, I think, a reasonably officiated game. I'm not complaining about in either of the last two games in terms of officiating, but he was clearly fouled at the rim, and it should have been 84-80 with Caleb shooting two free throws and Michigan still in the game. Instead, they let it go. It was a jump ball, and then Illinois came down and hit another three. So this wasn't like a blowout by any stretch of the imagination. And it wasn't because Michigan played poor on offense, because they didn't. They played a pretty good offensive game.
So. Yeah. Has me feeling good about tonight, sort of bucking the trend that we've seen this team be on in the win-loss column. I do want to look ahead before we start talking about a tournament. Well, I mean, I guess it all flows together. You look at the Ohio State game. What do you think these next two games, does a split, is that good enough to punch your tournament ticket? Do they still have work to do? And what do you make of the matchup with Ohio State? Because you said you don't have much to complain about with officiating for these last two games, Craig. Yeah. There certainly was something to complain about from that Ohio State game. Even on the road, I can't imagine officiating being as poor as it was against Michigan here at home in that loss to the Buckeyes.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, that was a poorly officiated game. I felt that Michigan could match up with Ohio State, but I don't know. Something happened in that game. It just didn't work. So, you know, we'll see. I think they've got to win one of these last two. To be honest, I think if they win one of the last two, they'll be 17-13. Maybe they'll have to win their first round in the NCAA tournament. But recall last year, Michigan State got in with, what, 9-11 in the Big Ten and 13-15 overall. And I think a part of that was because their strength of schedule was really high. And I think for some reason, we're sitting at a strength of schedule of 7. It was 6 on KenPom earlier in the week, but by playing Michigan State, we dropped a notch. But I suspect after Iowa's up at 14 on KenPom and Ohio State's in the 20s, so I suspect we're going to be about number 5 by the time the dust clears. And it would seem hard to me for the NCAA to keep Michigan out. Unless they completely frittered away down the stretch. But certainly they'll be in with one of two in the last two and one game in the Big Ten tournament. That's my vision. I think it's everyone's vision.
Wait, what say you, Brian?
Yeah, I mean, it feels like they need two more to feel real, like, secure mm-hmm. going into Selection Sunday. And whether that's sweeping the regular season or getting a win in the first round of the Big Ten tournament, I think that'll do it.
Seth?
Yeah, I'm a little nervous because the up-down thing would have them lose to Iowa tonight, beat Ohio State on the road, and then lose their Big Ten opener, which might be a little... But I mean, if we get in, then at least we're making it to the second round. I have a weird number of Illinois people in my timeline. I think I follow them because I feel so bad for their football team. And they've been very interesting lately. They've got a massive conspiracy about officiating in the Big Ten from their Ohio State game. And they said that there was apparently Underwood complained to the Big Ten and some things changed afterwards. And since that game, Ohio State lost to Maryland and they lost to Nebraska and they got officiated a little bit differently than they have been in previous games. So I don't know if Illinois Twitter is onto something here. They also think that the rims are small in Wisconsin, that... Something
what?
Something at Purdue fans.
That isn't serious, really.
Something you can't, that Purdue fans are jumping in on, too.
Craig, you can't yell at other people for crazy conspiracy theories.
These are not Michigan conspiracies.
You have to say, that sounds reasonable to me.
No, all of my conspiracy theories are reasonable. All of everyone else's conspiracy theories are crazy.
Well, these are not Michigan conspiracy theories. These are Illinois and Purdue fans are convinced that Ohio State gets officiated differently than everybody else until... Underwood said something, and that changed everything because they just lost to Maryland, and they lost to Nebraska at home. Nebraska. Do you know how bad Nebraska is? You know how injured Nebraska is? They lost to Nebraska at home.
So bad that you look at Fred Hoiberg, who when they got him, I'm like, man, that's a big pickup. Like, how can you justify bringing Fred Hoiberg back? And it sounds like the only justification is they can't afford to let him go. Like, they can't fire him right now. That's why he'll be back next year. So they have been terrible, which is another thing that gives me some confidence about Michigan, not just winning tonight, but winning the regular season finale against Ohio State. We'll see.
Well, one other thing is that Michigan has Tuesday, Thursday games this week before the Ohio State game. So does Ohio State. So whatever kind of fatigue that Michigan might have had build up because they had a COVID reschedule shouldn't apply to the OSU game.
Well, you know, I'm not a believer, as you know, in this idea at all. My, you know, I don't think Michigan was fatigued Tuesday because they played Sunday. You know, we're not dealing with 50-year-olds. We're dealing with kids. And I don't think they're going to be tired tonight at all. And so I, you know, in fact, I kind of like the fact that we played 3 games in 4 or 5 days and Iowa hasn't played for 5 or 6 days. I think that favors us, not them. Not a believer in the fresh legs theories when it comes to games. I think it's just something fans say.
You must have just been unbelievable in your high school playing career, Craig. You never got tired ever as a player.
Never. When I was in my 20s, starting to practice law, when I played 6 days a week, never tired. And in fact, where I got most tired was pickup games, not City League games, not university games. I never got tired in those because you got timeouts. You're not in the game all the whole time. I mean, it's this is silliness. And it has been silliness for as long as people.
Yeah, it makes more sense now why you think, you know, a 6-man rotation is a good idea. You just think fatigue is a factor.
Not in a 40-minute game with referees and 8 timeouts and half times. Are you kidding me? I mean, it's, you know, maybe playing 2 hours of over at Burns Park on Saturday morning and not sitting out. Yeah, you come home, you're tired.
But, you. Well, we should. Fortunately. Whether it's Juwan Howard or Phil Bartelli, they're listening to Hunter say, "Coach, I'm gassed, man. I need a blow." Hunter did seem pretty tired after the game on what was that, Tuesday? See, I'm tired and I didn't even play. We gotta get to a break. When you come back on the other side, we'll switch gears a little bit. We'll talk about some hockey as the Wolverines. They actually lost this time against Notre Dame, Brian. It wasn't.
Yeah, final. I know.
They weren't overtime losses this time. So we'll get into that and more as we close things out. MGO Blog Roundtable on the other side here on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, The Ticket.
You know, there really is something wrong with Tom Izzo. I mean, I don't want to go out on a limb, but that there is some psychological / emotional issue there. I mean, and like my wife was chastising me that I was making fun of him. I'm serious, but
man, comes to Georgia. I was surprised that Hunter got so under his skin, though.
Like, yeah, I mean, Izzo should have been laughing at him. Hey, Izzo should have been laughing at him.
Why are you surprised that someone got under Tom Izzo's skin?
He has to be
like that, though, where he's spazzing out. I mean, the guy got...
He's a narcissist. He's the biggest narcissist in coaching. And that is saying something because all coaches are narcissists. I mean, they have to take themselves seriously. You cannot make a joke... about you cannot make him the butt of the joke. Like, when you say too small to Tom Izzo, he knows he's small. they have to put a phone book under his butt every single time he sits down for a press conference.
You see, part of the theory of Tom Izzo's coaching style, and I think he's coaching to his personality, but there is a strategy to it too that goes, look, I'm gonna be on your ass so hard that no matter what anyone else says to you, it won't affect you because I insult you more than anyone else ever could. He is on the floor in Gabe Brown's face, right? He's chasing Julius Marble down. I mean, he's in transition, running back to get back on defense. Tom Izzo's yelling at him down the floor. He's having a conversation with Izzo and not being focused on getting back. Tom Izzo is on his players harder than any opponent ever could be. So why would you be concerned about what Hunter is saying to them? Hunter shouldn't be able to affect them based on how you talk to him.
Yeah, I mean, that's obvious. I don't know what's going on there. But, you know, one thing that you said to me, Sam, or said before we started was really intriguing, or maybe Ira, that if Bingham has another
year.
Coming
back, guys.
Could he play it at Ann Arbor?
I mean, I was joking.
Oh, it was Brian.
We should have traded him Johns.
And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider, Sports Talk 1050, WTKA online at WTK.com. I joke with Tim McCormick on the, and this actually wasn't a joke. I said, you know, the biggest recruiting job for Michigan might be, can they recruit their own guys? Can you entice, Caleb Houston and Musa Diabate, especially guys who are going to be told, are being told that, hey, you know, your NBA draft prospects, forget what those mock drafts are saying, they're still there. Can they keep those guys in the fold? Musa being the tougher of the two, but now with NIL, and we sort of talked about this a little bit, you guys see with Oscar Tshiebwe, you know, being, I guess there's some kind of visa allowance now for NIL that is allowing Tshiebwe to get NIL funds, and that may be a part of getting him to return. Maybe that could be a part of getting Musa to return, a part of Caleb getting him to return. And then, I mean, out on a limb, super far-fetched, but I don't know, have you guys seen Hunter Dickinson anywhere on these mock draft boards? I mean,
no, he's not in the top 100. People think his defense is just not going to work at the NBA level. So, yeah, I mean, if Dickinson goes through draft process and they're like, you're not draftable, he's got a choice, right? He can be like, all right, well, I'm either going to go to the G League and play in Europe, or I'm going to go back to Michigan. And Michigan needs to make that latter decision, the better one financially, right? Mm-hmm. They can't compete if you're in the first round, probably. But if you're not in the first round, you're looking at the G League. All right. To this point, I have not believed any of the stuff about how Michigan's NIL packages are not up to snuff. They don't get back Hunter Dickinson, who's going to go undrafted, I will be concerned. Let's put it like that. Because he is like one of the, he like that kind of player, college star, doesn't have great NBA potential. That's the exact kind of player NIL should be keeping in college. So got to do it.
You know what just dawned on me? He's not this player, but the type of personality he is, the dude is Christian Laettner. The dude is he's not the, make no mistake, he is not the player Christian Laettner was. But the smack talking in your face, gonna give it to you every time. And you're talking to a person who hated Christian Laettner, but have come to, admittedly, and I've always respected his game. He's the best college player I've ever seen, Christian Laettner. So, I mean, to when I look at Hunter, and you to take the parallel a little bit farther, I know, you know, Christian Laettner was a high first round pick, fourth pick in the draft, I think. But he was a much better college star, right? Much bigger college star than he ever was in the pros. Seems like that's destined to be Hunter's future too. So if you can pay him to stay, you know, this further his legacy in Ann Arbor, that might be a move he's willing to make if you make it worth his while financially.
Well, yeah, that's, I mean, Brian's point, your point's good, are both good, and we just don't know. It seems like Hunter wanted to go last year, though.
He did.
And that's part of the issue. I mean, he wants to be a professional basketball player at some level, and so it isn't clear to me that Michigan will be successful at keeping him almost regardless of what those realities are. You know, for me, the bigger issue is whether the NBA sees Moose's ceiling or Caleb's ceiling sufficiently high to be willing to expend a higher draft pick on them. You know, some mock drafts seem to say yes, most no. And so there's a question there. And then you have the question of, well, what does Juwan do if they have no Musa next year? Because now, what do they have, you know, in center? Are they going to bring Brandon Johns back? They could, but he's not really a center. You've got the kid coming in, Terrence Reed. But, you know, you've got a freshman and maybe Brandon Johns or not. Are they giving up on Brandon? So do they bring Marcus Bingham in, as a grad transfer and say, you know, you've been mistreated enough. it's time. And I like Bingham. It's time for you to come and play for a guy, A, who can coach big men, and B, isn't going to treat you like a punching bag. We'll take Gabe Brown too, because I love that guy.
I swear I remember talking to one of the coaches at his high school. He was like, man, I don't get it. I don't get why he would go there. I mean, it just defied logic that he thought that would work better than Michigan, for instance. But anyway, you know, you got a chance to correct that error and go play for Juwan Howard. I would think that would be very appealing to the young man. So we'll see if he decides to jump in the portal.
Another thing, and I don't know what your thoughts are on this, Devontae. I went back and I looked. Can Devontae come back? I mean, I don't know if he wants to come back.
Tim said the same thing. Tim said
he can come back.
He can, but here's, and I'll say to you what I said to Tim. He's either 24 now or he will be 24 for next season. So, I just wonder if at this point he would be like, even with the draft prospects not being there, I need to get started with my professional career whether that's the developmental league or overseas. He's got
a career overseas, but again, like, this is the University of Michigan. We have a money cannon. Like, I think you could get a number from him. See if you can hit the number, right?
You guys got to keep in mind the difference between Oscar Schwiebe and Mutsu Diabate is enormous. What the top players in the game can get, and also what Kentucky can do. Because, like, there's NIL and there's quote NIL, right? And what Kentucky did to make that happen was, like, they had to work with admissions to, like, readmit him under, like, a different, it was like a whole back and forth. And they were doing it with the Congo, who was very interested in seeing one of their players showcased, right? So they had a government that worked with them. Michigan would have to talk to France, who is, I've worked with the French government before, and they are not any better than Michigan.
Maybe Macron's a big Moussa fan. You never know.
He would hope so, but I mean, they work slow in France. I don't know if Michigan is able to command the kind of NIL program right now, and if we should even expect them to. Not because the money's not there, but because we haven't set it up. Kentucky has had guys set up ready to pay enormous amounts of money for something signed for years.
Sure, yeah, but let's just get it done then. Like, you think Stephen Ross can't, like, figure out how to do this? Like, do it. It's easy. It's legal. Do it.
Yeah, this is actually one where I don't think this is that far fetched. They have to talk to France. I guess my response to that would be and. I mean, this is,
well, no. Not just France. Michigan admissions. So I mean, there's,
well, just figure it out. Like, yeah, if Shibwe can do it, then get it done.
Like, yeah. All right, I got to get some hockey in. We only got a few minutes left, so you know, like,
really?
I said,
do Brian, we really have Brian, to get Brian, hockey in?
Oh, we could talk. We could talk about the coach of the year on the Michigan women's basketball side. So I got to give Kim a huge shout out. Give Nas a shout out after she got shouted out by LeBron James for being 4-time all Big Ten. So that was good to see. But yeah, the hockey team dropped to Notre Dame, and they actually dropped these two this time, Brian. So just
yeah. Well, I mean, Notre Dame is a team where you can't make the big mistake, right? And so you're tied at one in the Friday game, and your goalie wanders out of the net and makes a really bad decision, and then you're behind. And Notre Dame was on point all weekend. Michigan couldn't really get inside the house at all. I mean, they dominated in terms of possession. They dominated in terms of shot attempts. And usually when you block a lot of shots, you're probably going to lose that game because blocking shots means you don't have the puck. But they were essentially flawless all weekend, and Michigan just couldn't find a way through. And then on the Saturday game, you have absolutely ridiculous no call that decides that game. So the most blatant interference I think I've seen in years, where you just bowl over two Michigan players, and then you, who has bowled over two Michigan players, is conveniently alone in front of the net for a rebound. Just a disgusting display of Big Ten officiating. Which has been horrendous all year. So it's unfortunate. It's frustrating. Notre Dame is the most buttoned up team in the country. They're so disciplined. And so you just can't give away goals. And Michigan gave away a goal on Friday, and then the officials gave away a goal on Saturday. And that's why you lose.
It feels like the one team you don't want to see again right now. Like, I look at the Big Ten tournament on the men's basketball side, like, I feel like every team, like, you know, Michigan can beat that team. They can beat that team. The one team I feel like I don't want to see, because I don't know that they can beat Illinois. Should we feel the same way about Notre Dame?
To some extent, yeah. But those, all these games have been super tight and have turned on really small margins. So, I mean, I feel like Michigan is very likely to see Notre Dame again, because the bottom three teams in the league are horrendous. So the chances that anybody gets upset in the first round of the playoffs is minimal. So I think you're going to see Notre Dame again. And Michigan is, to some extent, it doesn't really matter, right? Because they're locked in as a one seed. They can't get a regional closer than Allentown, Pennsylvania. I mean, if they could get back up to the number one overall seed again, they would get the Atlantic Hockey Auto Qualifier, which would be a better matchup in the first round. But there's not a whole lot they're playing for, at least. So I would like to see them play Notre Dame again, because you want to see them get another crack at that and maybe prove to yourselves that you can beat that team.
I completely agree. I'd like to see Wisconsin again in the Big Ten tournament, too, somehow. I mean, those are... You know, and I,
everybody wants to see that. The ratings would be through the roof.
Yeah, and in terms of Brian's comment about officiating, you know, I think actually Big Ten officiating, even though it's uneven, has not been that terrible. I mean, there have been some bad games. The Ohio State
Craig's
game,
meds.
Yeah. The Ohio State game was terrible, but the last two games have been pretty good, but they had very good officials assigned to those games.
I was talking about hockey officials.
I know, but I'm saying hockey has been worse. Hockey has been 1,000 times worse this year than basketball could ever dream of being. And I think hockey is easier to officiate, and it's been worse. I mean, and that call on Saturday night was, or non-call, was just unbelievable, impossible to believe. With an official standing 5 feet away, staring right at it, and it, you know, was absurd.
Gotcha. Well, fellas, another great roundtable session. Hopefully, when we come back next week, we'll be talking about the Cure Michigan men's basketball team in terms of NCAA tournament, because they will have had a couple of more victories to end the regular season. Time will tell. We'll talk about it next week here. MGlobal Roundtable. Thanks for listening to the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050, WTK, The Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.